today's issues continues on AFR.
Welcome back to this Tuesday edition of Today's Issues. This is Walker Wildman sitting in for Ed Vitagliano and my father, Tim Wildman. Both of them are in Nashville. I think my father's traveling to Nashville. Ed Vitagliano is in Nashville. The last hour, the show was hosted from Nashville, so we had Ed Vitagliano hosting, and Fred and I are in our headquarters here in Tupelo, Mississippi. But this hour, we're just going to be in Tupelo. Ed had other things he needed to get to there at NRB, so we're going to host the news from Tupelo, Mississippi this last segment. Before we went to the break, we were talking about Mississippi State University, which I am I'm proudly an alumni of Mississippi State, almost days. But this day, I'm a little hesitant because what we talked about before the break is that Mississippi State University in Starkville, Mississippi, is paying for a Christian, quote, Christian abortionist to come speak at the university. That's a very objectionable viewpoint, but we're not suggesting that the viewpoint should be turned down or denied, but rather we want someone who is an actual Christian to come present the pro-life viewpoint. And we want it to be paid for by the university. The same funds that are being used to bring in Dr. Parker, we want the university to bring in a Christian pro-life speaker to present an opposing viewpoint. And that's what college is all about. That's what public universities are all about, is providing a platform for both viewpoints to be heard. So you can see that action alert at afa.net. Simply visit afa.net and you can find out more information about that. Welcome back, Fred.
Yeah, and I think if you're an alumni member at Mississippi State University, you should be calling down there and say, hey, you know, when is the true pro-life view going to be presented down there at university expense? And if you're an alumni that contributes to the university, you may want to mention that. But this, you know, and I think the university also, because they're publicizing this like crazy.
Yes.
Same amount of publicity for the pro-life person.
Yeah.
It needs to be an equal footing for those young people down there to hear from both sides. But one of the things that really bothers me, a Christian perspective on abortion?
Right.
Give me a break.
Yeah. And the speech is endorsed by the president's office and the provost office, which is also very troubling. And just to tell you folks listening, I reached out personally to the president's office on multiple occasions to get financial information. This is a public university. These, from all we know, these are public funds being used to bring in this speaker. And the university on multiple occasions failed to provide me that financial information. So hopefully they'll provide it under enough pressure in the days to come. But Steve Jordahl is joining us, and he has other news. Steve, there's some breaking news just out the last half hour. So.
Yeah, good morning, guys. President Trump says he's going to run in 2020. Now, this might be kind of given, but, you know, he's been taking an awful lot of heat his first year in office. And a lesser man may have decided just to say, you know, I can do this for 4 years, but I can't do eight. He's gung-ho all in. And the way we know that he's running is he has named a campaign manager. The campaign manager is going to be a guy named Brad Parscale. He played a leading role in his 2016 campaign as his digital campaign manager. He's being promoted to the full campaign manager. So it looks like we're going to have another interesting election in 2020.
If I didn't poke fun at President Trump, even though I love him, if I didn't poke fun at him, I wouldn't be honest. Because if this was a Democrat, I would be picking at him and picking at him. So I have to be fair here. That's what, according to Drudge Report, this is 980 days out from from the election day in 2020. Fred,
yep.
Have you ever heard of someone 3 years out calling for their run?
No. But then we're talking about Donald Trump,
and
he has a motivation. He may not be out there saying why he's doing that, but you can bet he's a businessman. He understands what he's doing. I believe in the calculation. Probably it has something to do with what's happening in November this year.
Yeah, that's true.
Because yesterday, and during the speech at CPAC on Friday, I guess it was, he part of that speech, and was an hour and 10 minutes long, he put the charge out there to the conservatives that were at CPAC, we got to get busy and win this election. You know, the midterm elections are always kind of, well, they've been recognized historically as been a bit of a sleeper. You know, you don't get the kind of turnout that you get in presidential elections. But I think the Republicans are well aware. They need to work hard to keep the House, to keep the Senate. Otherwise, the president has had enough difficulty in the first 2 years of his term with Republicans in control and trying to get his agenda. That agenda is going to be greatly affected if they don't, Republicans don't do well this fall.
Yeah, Steve, you have a story to that angle, but some in the Republican Party are saying, hold up a minute, we might need to do some more before 2018.
Well, there is. As the conservatives are saying, you know, it feels like the tide is turning for the president. He got his tax cuts through. He has performed pretty well on this Florida shooting thing, even if some Second Amendment advocates might not agree with him completely on what he's proposing,
his response.
But I think most of the country is saying he's doing an okay job. But what we played with the governors, boy, I tell you, that roundtable with the shooting victims,
yeah,
I just see a lot more things public opinion-wise turning his way. But conservatives are saying we can't stop. It's time to put put the pedal down and keep going. So tax cuts alone won't stave off the Democrats in 2018. They say you need to keep going with some more stuff. My question to you guys is, what stuff do you think the Republicans have to do between now and the end of the year, between now and September, to make 2018 better for Republicans?
Well, I think, and then I'll let Fred jump in on this, I think that I don't think infrastructure and big spending items like that are going to cut it. I think it would be great if the Senate did away with the 60-vote threshold and went to a simple majority on legislation. This way, with the 51 Republicans we have now, they could pass something like Kate's Law or some funding for the border wall, because you just had the Supreme Court refuse to hear the DACA case, which essentially upholds, for the meantime, a lower court decision which prevents President Trump from ending the DACA program, which the DACA program is deferred action on childhood arrivals. It allows illegal immigrants within a certain age range to stay in the country illegally, but have some protection there. So I would like to see Congress act on border security, a border wall, or maybe some immigration reform. But it would need to be conservative in order to bolster the Republican election in 2018.
It's going to be a big question for this fall as to who the American public is going to blame with regards to DACA. You know, the president has gone out there. Again, it's President Donald Trump, and shocked a lot of people by saying he's willing to give 1.8 million of these Dreamers, and DACA are a portion of what's called the Dreamers, the people who came across the border illegally as kids with their parents. He's willing to give a pathway to citizenship, albeit quite long, 10 to 12 years, for 1.8 million. And you even have some people who would normally be die-wool Democrats saying, that's a pretty good deal. But the Democrats are not willing to go along with that, basically because they don't want to secure our southern border. They don't want to give the president the $25 billion that he wants to complete the border wall. So I think in reality, he can go into, and he's going to be out there doing campaigning throughout the next several months. I think he can rightly go out there and say, I gave them a sweetheart of a deal. I really did. And I think, you know, the Latino community in this country is going to see that. They're going to see that 1.8 million of these folks, these young people, could have had a pathway to citizenship, but the Democrats put a stop to it because they don't want to fund us. A lot of these folks who are in the country legally now, in the Hispanic population, they want the wall. They actually want it. And they cannot see why the Democrats aren't willing to at least give approval for that. There's some debate on some of the other portions of what the president's plan is. But I think the president can go out there, he can get on the stump, and he can be out there, and he can be saying, look, I wanted to give a pathway to citizenship to these folks, but the Democrats stopped. And when you have people on the Democrat side like Nancy Pelosi saying, no, we don't need a border wall, we just need to mow the lawns down there so people don't crawl through the grass. You know, the American people, whether you're left or right, saying, Nancy, we're not just buying that at all.
Right, right. Steve, from what you're reading, do you think Congress is going to circle back on this immigration reform, or do we think that ship sailed?
No, I do think that there's a chance that they can come back and take a look at it. DACA is in the courts, but the president continues to keep dropping hints. He keeps saying, I think we'd all like to do something on DACA. And as long as it's still in his mind, I think there's still a possibility that something could happen. This article from The Hill is mentioning some things that I haven't heard a whole lot about. Some Republicans from the Republican Study Committee, for example, is suggesting that the president might want to go after criminal justice reform. I think the broad-based way to do that, and I think it would go a long way into undercutting the Democrat hold on that issue, would be to start seeing if there's some way to get inequities in the sentencing mandates, for example, or the prison population, somehow to address that kind of a reform. And then there's also, I hadn't seen this before, but some are also asking for pharmaceutical reform. As you know, the cost of prescription drugs and everything are just ridiculous, and some feel, after Pharma Bro, that the pharmaceutical industry is just raking it in hand over fist.
Yeah, I think infrastructure, I'd like to say infrastructure will be bipartisan, but nothing's really bipartisan nowadays unless the Republicans give up everything they want. The reason I say that is because if we could get infrastructure that where we cut spending from maybe Pakistan or some of these foreign countries who continually burn our flags and bash us, this is what Senator Rand Paul's proposed, cut spending foreign aid from some of those countries, divert that money into infrastructure. But the Democrats probably won't go for that.
Well, here's the thing. You and Rand Paul are maybe the only two people that I'm hearing seriously talk about cutting spending.
Right. You're right.
And the Republican Study Committee or the Freedom Caucus, these are all fiscal hawks. They are not going to go for an infrastructure bill if it doesn't come with some serious spending cuts. And I don't know that I've seen anybody really, with the exception of Mr. Paul, bring that up as a serious as a way to get to spending cuts.
Yeah.
The other thing is Democrats should be on board for infrastructure, but it would be a victory for President Trump, and I think they see the tea leaves turning as well. So, tea leaves turn, but they don't want to give him a victory now, especially right before the midterms. So they need to obstruct.
Yeah.
I think that's the tack they're going to take.
Yeah.
I think the counter argument to the spending more money is what Trump's people have been arguing. Because of tax reform and because the unemployment rate has been dropping, you're going to have more people contributing revenue to the central government, to the federal government. And that's what will pay for infrastructure. I think that's the thinking in there. And, of course, we're not going to know that until about a year from now when we start to get the numbers on the increase of revenue coming into the government. I mean, I look at what firm was it? They brought money from offshore, and $39 billion of that money they brought
Apple.
Apple. Was it $200 billion they brought back from offshore? $39 billion of that went into government coffers.
Yes.
So I think that is what the president's thinking is, and his economic advisors around him are saying, get more people off of food stamps, get more people off of unemployment, get them working because they will pay tax revenue into the system. So that's the counter argument.
Yeah.
But we won't see that for about a year or so.
There's another issue to be taken into consideration when we talk about 2018, and that is the liberal wing, some would call it the moderate wing, but we would call it the liberal wing of the Republican Party, is now trying to redefine it as well. And Arnold Schwarzenegger, ex-governor of California, and John Kasich, have gotten together and are starting to talk about what they can do or what the Republican Party needs to do from their perspective to be more competitive. And that means they're running to the left. And they're using words like they want to create a positive and inclusive and expansive Republican Party. And from them, that means softer, if not just doing away with social issues. Mm-hmm. They would take the swamp view on spending, the what we saw from President George W. Bush, who, for all his wonderful social values and the way he fought the post 9/11 thing, was really not a good fiscal conservative. So I think there's a battle within the Republican Party that's simmering as well.
Yeah, it sounds like Kasich just needs to join the Democratic Party because the Republican Party is more, quote, inclusive than it's ever been. Maybe not from its party platform. Its party platform is very conservative, which I would argue is inclusive. But as far as the actual Republican politicians themselves in Washington, they cave and fold with anything the Democrats demand. So if you move the Republican Party in Washington, D.C., that is, if you move the establishment in Washington, D.C. any farther left, they will be sitting on the same aisle as Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer.
If you take a look at everything in California is to the left of the rest of the nation. So that means the Republican Party, I think if you were to compare the California heart of the Republican Party as embodied by Arnold Schwarzenegger and many others there, and you compare them maybe with Democrats in the South, you would find a very strong correlation there. I think, mm-hmm. They're a lot of Southern Democrats are pro-life, at least at the state level, if they can't say it at the federal level. Right. A lot of Southern Democrats are just Democrats because that's what they've been raised, but they have fairly conservative leanings.
Mm-hmm. All right, what else you got?
We had an amazing admission from a Hollywood actress. Jennifer Lawrence has said that it's not wise for celebrities to talk about politics because it hurts their careers. Jennifer Lawrence.
What's she been in?
She's the one with The Hunger Games, and she's just in the. She's in a new movie that's out now. That's why she's talking.
Oh, Red something.
Red Sparrow.
Yes.
She was also in this.
She's been in a couple films.
Terrible movie called Mother, which I didn't see, but I understand was just blasphemous to the nth degree. Anyway, this is what she said. Of course, they're not going to about. Republicans, he said, the Democrats made a huge mistake by chastising the Trump supporters, and that was disgusting to me, she says. Of course they're not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. They're going to vote for Donald Trump. You laughed at them when their plight is very real.
Hmm. Well, isn't she the one that a couple weeks ago said she was going to devote some time to
take a year off to save democracy?
That's right. Yes. So apparently she's, I don't know,
maybe she thinks that bashing grassroots people, whether it be Republican or Democrat, is not a good idea. Maybe she's one of those no confrontation.
She might be a Michael Jordan actress. In other words, Michael Jordan, he of
not picking sides.
Republicans buy tennis shoes as well. Republicans go see movies too.
Right.
And for all the leftward leaning and the stupid things that come out of Hollywood as far as political opinions. It's about time that someone starts saying. And the other thing I think this counters, perhaps, is she might be seeing that the left, the Democrats, are running, trying to run on an anger that really isn't there for most of America. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we talked about this yesterday or not, but you hear from the Democrats, impeach 45,
right.
And what a terrible job the president, how bad of a guy he is. They're angry at it. But you know what? Most of America doesn't concern themselves with that. They don't follow that. Even liberals are more concerned with policies than they are with the guy.
Yeah.
So maybe she's pushing back.
The Democrats on the left seem to be moving farther left, but they're appealing to a very small fraction of their base, which is the angry base. Everything's bad. Mm-hmm. America's burning. We got to take it back.
Yeah, and that's the big fight. We talked yesterday about the California Democratic Party rejecting Dianne Feinstein.
Yes.
I mean, and that doesn't get played up very much, the deep division. They're looking for what their soul is going to be, their political soul is going to be. I think they look at Bernie Sanders and his relative success against Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election. And, you know, you have an older gentleman, I'll refer to Bernie Sanders that way, collecting the votes of so many millennial people because of his very kind of socialist mentality and trying to key in. In fact, to that point, I was looking at, and we're talking about this in the newsroom this morning, there's a new poll out today on the growing number of Americans that now support a universal basic income. And this story from CNBC says back 10 years ago, only 10% of Americans supported that. Now, according to this new poll of 3,000 people, and Gallup was involved, and Gallup's usually have a pretty decent poll, of 3,000 Americans, 48%, according to this poll, support a universal income. And for those who may not be familiar with that term, basically is the government sends you a check every month. Mm-hmm. I think, was it Stockton, California?
Yeah, Stockton had
They're testing it, aren't they?
Yeah, but it's not
a fair
test.
It's a very controlled test.
It's not a fair test because it's only about 100 people. So if you want to know what the impact of a universal income is on a city, you don't take a couple hundred people out of a couple hundred thousand and start giving them money because the couple hundred thousand aren't really going to feel it.
Right.
When everybody gets it, then everybody's going to feel it.
Right.
But these are the kinds of polls that the Democrats key in on, saying, okay, you know, the climate is changing out there. Maybe we can appeal to that group of people who think it's just a grand old idea that we send everybody a check every month. Yeah. And that will make them happy and support that kind of thing. But that's where the liberals, they like to pontificate out there about these kinds of things. But then reality hits. Mm-hmm. Who's going to pay for those paychecks every month? Where's that money coming from? And, you know, it's when that realization is there, you know, when the millennials become mom and dad and they've got a household to feed and they start saying, wait a minute, I'm being taxed more to send a check to this guy over here who has no interest in working. He's just going to collect checks. I'm not going to put up with that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think what we're going to find out is as liberal states and counties and cities continue to test this utopia-type policy, California, Abe Hamilton III brought this in last week, California has the highest poverty rate per capita in the country.
But they're having a terrible time with homelessness down south.
So folks think that you can spend endlessly and borrow endlessly and there be no effect. Maybe at the federal level when you have a printing press, but at a state level, you cannot continue to write checks to people who don't work, not because they're unable to work, because they don't want to work, and do things like this and pay for illegal immigrants' health care and education and housing and all this, and not see the repercussions. And as you mentioned, Steve, San Diego, Los Angeles, some of these cities have disgusting downtown areas because homeless people are setting up shop on the sidewalks there. And it's a very, very a sad situation, honestly. Liberal policies do not work, and that shows, proves itself over time. All right, folks, you've been listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio Network. We'll be back tomorrow live from National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll see you then.